This is WBCR-LP Great Barrington, Berkshire Community Radio, broadcasting at 97.7 FM and streaming at berkshireradio.org. Stay tuned for a Farm and Garden Show with J. Allison Moscariello and Bill Taylor. On today's show, we talk with Jamie Nadler and Zach Rissman from Dancing Greens Farm in Monterey, Massachusetts. First, some upcoming events. The Great Barrington Seed Library needs a coordinator to provide this community resource. Contact the Great Barrington Public Library at 413-528-1619, extension 6000. Once again, 413-528-1619, extension 6000. Here are the farmers markets in Berkshire County and adjacent New York State. Copaic Hillsdale Farmers Market is at 9140 Route 22 in Copaic, New York, Saturdays through November 23rd, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Great Barrington Farmers Market is at 18 Church Street, Great Barrington, Saturdays through November 9th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Lee Farmers Market is at 25 Park Place in front of the First Congregational Church, Saturdays through October 12th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Millerton Farmers Market is at Millerton Methodist Church, 6 Duchess Avenue, Saturdays 10 to 2 year-round. North Adams Farmers Market meets on Main Street from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. every Saturday through October 19th. Otis Farmers Market is 2000 East Otis Road in the parking lot of Papa's Healthy Food and Fuel, East Otis, Saturdays through October 12th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pittsfield Farmers Market is at the Common, 101st Street in Pittsfield, Saturdays through October 12th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., sponsored by Roots Rising. Sheffield Farmers Market is at the First Congregational Church, 125 Main Street, Fridays 3 to 6 p.m. through October 11th. West Stockbridge Farmers Market is at the Foundry Green on Harris Street, Thursdays through October 3rd, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Information on all markets can be found at berkshiregrown.org. And here's one more market. Williamstown Farmers Market is at Spring Street Municipal Parking Lot every Saturday from 9 to 1 through November 2nd. Berkshire Botanical Garden in Stockbridge offers many classes on gardening, horticulture, cooking, and other garden-related topics. The website berkshirebotanical.org/events has listings. Phone is 413-298-3926. That's 413-298-3926. Email is info@berkshirebotanical.org. Hancock Shaker Village has many events, including a 90-minute tour every Wednesday from 10 to 11:30 in the morning, blacksmithing, timber frame building, Shaker Suppers November 1st and 30th, and much more. Email is info@hancockshakervillage.org. Website is hancockshakervillage.org. Berkshire Agricultural Ventures will hold a community event September 18th, ahead of Climate Week New York, to raise awareness of the climate-related challenges facing farmers in the region. Through the perspectives of local farmers and regional experts, hear about pressing issues on our local farms as well as solutions being implemented in partnership with BAV and others. All community members interested in climate issues and the viability of local agriculture are invited to attend. The event will run September 18th from 5 to 7 p.m., and an optional Greenagers Farm Tour begins at 4 p.m. Location is 62 Undermountain Road, South Egremont. On September 19th and October 17th, from 5:30 to 6:30, Ariana Collins, director of the Hoosick River Watershed Association, and Justin Adkins, co-owner of Wild Soul River, explore the Hoosick River Valley, talking about the plants growing along the river and their many connections to the lives around them, including humans. Quote, we will each enter this space as teacher and learning together, unquote, they say. Quote, as we learn from the plants of the ancestral homelands of the Stockbridge Munsee Mohicans. Registration is at wildsoulriver.com. On September 24th, a similar walk meets at the Clark Museum from 4 to 5 p.m. Registration required through the Clark Art Institute, 413-458-2303 to register. Once again, 413-458-2303 to register, and that is in Williamstown. Jamie Nadler and Jack Rissman run and are on the team of Dancing Greens Farm in Monterey, Massachusetts in the Berkshire Hills. This new regenerative farm is woman-owned, and we met them as fellow vendors at the West Stockbridge Farmers Market. They host fun shindigs at their farm during warm weather and also in Brooklyn, New York in the fall. We spoke with them on their farm in early September 2024.
Let me ask you, Jamie, how did you get started in farming? Where did you work before and during starting Dancing Greens Farm?
Yes, thank you so much for having us, first off, I want to say.
I'm delighted.
So excited to have you guys here on the farm, really. Honored to be asked. So I grew up in the suburbs of New York City. Both my parents commuted into New York, worked business jobs. I was a suburban kid, but I like to say that my start came from just eating a ton of vegetables. I was obsessed with vegetables as a kid. My favorite food was cucumbers, and I brought them to a junk food party in third grade, if that tells you anything.
Yes.
And in high school, I studied environmental science. I took an environmental science class, and we learned a lot about the connection between climate change and agriculture, and then in reverse between agriculture causing climate change. And I was really caught on that. And then at the same time, I worked on a farm my senior year of high school as a vegetable intern in the vegetable fields, and I loved this. Like, sparks went off. It was just the best feeling ever. And to have that academic understanding of agriculture causing so many problems and the result of climate change causing so many issues with agriculture, and then to have my hands in the dirt and be like, well, this is just the best feeling ever. I was addicted. Like, I couldn't let that go.
Now, you do know, by the way, that there are substances in the soil that are highly addictive. So that is true. When people say they have to have their hands in the dirt, that we start jonesing if we're traveling overseas and we're not in a, just have to dig up something.
Yeah. I actually feel it in the wintertime because I naturally don't have my hands in the soil as much. And I guess it's why, like, gardening is also therapy. When I'm not doing it, I miss it.
You can get a little of that in the greenhouse. I don't know if you keep it warm enough to...
Yeah. Right now, it's not worth to keep it in the middle of the winter.
So did you have the luxury of not having to do traditional office-type jobs before you went into the farming, just to get a sense of the background? What did you do?
A bit, quite honestly. I studied environmental science in college, and then I kept working on farms in and out of that. And then when I left school, I went straight into a farm apprenticeship program.
Fantastic.
I've had some experiences working with nonprofits, or I did an AmeriCorps thing where I was on the computer.
Right.
But really, I was very fortunate in that I have not. I've mostly been farming.
That's so fantastic. Mm-hmm. Because the reason I'm asking is because so many of us that are older, Bill and I are a little older, we look to you, your generation, to do exactly that, to skip that first place where you feel you have to get involved in a traditional kind of a corporate type place, and then do what you love to do.
Yeah.
And I'm very heartened by your experience and what you're telling me.
Well, it's really due to how fortunate, I'm sure Zach feels the same way, but I was growing up, and that my parents really always supported me to follow my dreams, and then were able to set me up with the ability to make that happen, which is not everybody's experience.
Right.
Yeah.
And hopefully with the new farm bills, there will be more people's experience.
Yeah.
Because we need more boots on the ground.
Yeah.
So I want to turn to Zach for a moment and ask him the same question. So what got you excited and turned on about farming, and how did you get into it, and what did you do before?
Yeah, thanks for the question. And also thanks for the opportunity to join you all today.
We are so delighted.
Super exciting. So
we're never going to leave.
Yeah, good.
Oh, by the way, this is an incredible farm. Just for our listeners, I'm just looking at a field with tall sunflowers, a beautiful greenhouse in the back, a ton of greens in the foreground with some squash plants, and I've got looking like onions and leeks happening over to the left side. It's just this beautiful, level, beautiful farm. And then there's some nasturtiums back there and some Oh, lots of calendula. So, okay, we're going back to you, Zach. Sorry about that.
And a nice view across the street,
and
too.
A gorgeous blue sky.
Yeah, and you know, quick plug for farming on that note, which is that when this is your job, your office is the wind and the birds and the sun. And that's one thing that really brought me into farming, was realizing that working and being productive and engaging in the world can also mean that I don't have to sacrifice really feeling the beauty of the earth. And so I think that's one that keeps me coming back to farming or being outside for a job, is the idea that the earth is my office, and that is a pretty cool thing.
Definitely. Yeah. Poetic, too, by the way. Did you have another job, too, before you did this? Did you have other kinds of work that you were doing that said, you know what, I really love doing this, and this is not making me happy? Did you have any of that kind of a transition or experience?
Yeah, so my journey to farming was a little bit different, some similarities, but different from Jamie. So I sort of went to college not expecting to ever become a farmer. It's pretty steeped in the Northeast suburban values about what success meant, and that it didn't necessarily mean being a farmer, right? It meant something different. And so I was fully brainwashed going into college, and then through college I had some experiences that took me away from that. But I was always really, really inspired by the earth and the love that I felt for natural spaces. And so then when I left college, I actually moved to West Virginia and worked at a nonprofit for a year through AmeriCorps in West Virginia. And that was a really interesting experience, because the nonprofit I loved and the mission was amazing and the work they were doing was really good. But it was some cognitive dissonance to be in such a beautiful place. If anyone has not been to West Virginia, it's just incredible mountains and so beautiful. And so to sit inside and look at these mountains out of a window was really challenging for me.
That would be killer.
Yeah, because it was such a beautiful place. And then actually while I was there, COVID hit. So I locked down in my apartment. And what actually brought me into farming was, during that time, I ended up starting a compost pile in a mop bucket that I had laying around. Mm-hmm. And I saw this video on the internet where you could cut off the top of a celery plant and resprout it. And so I did that, and I planted it in this compost bucket, and it grew. And that was the first time I'd ever actually really seen something grow. And that completely changed my life. While it was happening, I was thinking, wouldn't it be ridiculous if starting a compost pile in a mop bucket changed my life? And it did, you know?
Wow.
And that gave me just like this taste, this spark of really engaging in the idea of growth and life. And so then the next year, I actually ended up going to farm school at the University of Vermont. They do a 6-month farmer training program that teaches about organic farming. And so that's what I did, and that's how I sort of got trained in farming and learned how to actually do it. And doing that in a school setting was really great, because I had as much time as I wanted to just ogle the vegetables. And that was what really brought me into farming. I would just have all these moments where I would say, are you kidding me? Like, that's what this plant looks like in the ground? Because I would always just have bought it in a grocery store before. That was a really amazing experience. And then that sort of got me on the path.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. And I want to get back to you, Jamie, because you did mention before we even started talking Italy. Let's go to Italy. Although this is really pretty. It matches kind of many of the environments you'd see in Italy. What happened in Italy? And how did we come to the name for your farm?
So in 2021, I started graduate school in Rome, Italy, after the pandemic. Before the pandemic, I was actually in the Peace Corps and got evacuated, and I was stuck inside after about to have this life-changing experience and then not having that, instead of having a very different life-changing experience, as everybody did. And I was really thinking about farming during the time, and really thinking about the whole system, especially seeing it all sort of fall apart during that time, and craving both another international experience, but then also more economic and political answers to what I was seeing. And that sort of brought me to that program. While I was there, I met a group of women who were coming at it from different angles of the food system, from more cooking, from growing up on farms, from being in different part of the industries, like baking, things like that. And we were all really sort of drawn to the Italian agriturismo and the idea of bringing people on a working farm, having them have a place to stay, and then feeding them, and just what joy that is. So we dreamt up this really big idea while we were there of starting our own farm one day. We started meeting about it regularly, but it was just a concept at that point. And then at the same time, our program, we learned so much, but it was also very doomsday. Agriculture accounts for a third of all carbon emissions. We have to feed the world, yet everybody's obese, and all of these problems, and it was hard to wrap your head around. We were thinking about how to do this in more of like a joyful way that just connects people to food. So while we were there, that's where the dream started. And the story of our name comes talking about joyful moments. Me and Madison, who we, out of that group, we run the farm now. We went on this foraging trip outside of Rome one day. She founded, we took a bus out there, and it was just this one guy who, and a bunch of other Italians and other people who found it. We spent the whole morning walking around the woods foraging different chicories, and it was just such a fun, beautiful hike gathering greens. And then it accumulated with a lunch on this mountaintop. I know, poor me. And then
just there.
And we started making the salad. We put all the greens in a bowl and oil and salt, and then very quickly realized that no one brought any utensils. So instead, some guy brought out an accordion and everybody started dancing. And then we just all used our hands to dance with the greens. And so hence the name Dancing Greens. And when we were trying to think of a name, we just kept coming back to that memory. That's what we want to try to create again and again, is Dancing Greens.
That joy.
Yeah.
Bringing that joy home, the joy of the connection to the land, the joy of the food, wonderful food, speaking of which, we'll get into that a little bit later. I'm going to take a little detour because you just had me on a mountaintop and I just so relaxed. I feel a little bit like I'm in a meditation mood, and I'm wondering, where does forest bathing fit into this scheme of things? And meditation.
Sure, yeah, thanks. great segue.
I'm already there.
Yeah, so in addition to farming, I also guide forest bathing walks, which are mindful experiences in the forest, really designed to just open your awareness and your senses to the natural world and really open yourself to that deep reciprocity and connection with the world around us, and really go through a healing experience through that. That for me personally, one thing that brought me into farming, and one of this just like kind of common themes, is really just this sense of incredible awe for the earth. Really to look at either the micro or the macro, like anything from one leaf to an entire mountain, just the incredible beauty that exists on this earth that we have access to partake in is quite a gift, I think. So about a year ago, I trained in how to become a forest bathing guide, and so I lead that now. And actually, I partnered with Dancing Greens at one point to offer forest bathing through them. And we went just up the road to Beartown State Forest here and did a really wonderful, wonderful experience there. But if I were to try to really connect them even more, I would say that at its core, forest bathing is really about tuning into the world around you and really opening your awareness to wherever you are. And doing that on a farm is pretty cool, right? Because farms give you the opportunity to tune into all of your senses, right? So obviously there's sight and there's smell, and then you can even go into taste. And if you, you know, anytime you eat with really mindful awareness, that's really an amazing experience, and touch the different leaves, the different fruit. Yeah, so forest bathing is really just one avenue of opening up a mindful way of experiencing the world, then doing it on a farm is a pretty cool way to do it.
It sounds fantastic. Yeah. And have you partaken in this?
Yes, I've got to partake in it. Yes, I'm very fortunate.
Because I can see that.
So describe the team that works here. You mentioned Madison, and I think there are a few other people I saw on your website.
The team is mostly Madison and I doing this in full. And then through a lot of friends and family, we have different people that help us. So Zach spends quite a bit of time helping me in the field, and then also helping at our shindigs. And then my partner Andy has built the physical structures on the property and helps with farming and helps at shindigs. And we had a person this summer, Liz, who was helping with our social media. And then I talked about at the beginning that group of women that originally came up with the idea. So we have two people who are still play a huge part in participating. One is Maddie, who was a co-founder with us, and she's our storyteller. She is amazing at partnerships and then also developing our story to share, because that's another big thing of what we want to do. And then Galina, who is actually living in Germany now, and she's actually was here, she is our art director. So we're so fortunate, because when we first started, we had no concept of how to create a logo or a look or a color palette.
And it's amazing.
You have a great color palette.
Thank you.
Dancing Greens.
It's all Galina.
Wow.
Is it dancing-greens.com?
Yeah, dancing-greens.com.
It's amazing.
So Galina, the reason we leaned so far into pink is because Galina was like, do pink, and we were like, okay.
Definitely. So, the color of unconditional love. You get in there and you're already in a mode.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, I love what I see. Okay. What else you got going on? Speaking of what else you have going on, did you want to tell us more? Because I have a question for you.
No, go ahead.
It has to do with your website. Okay. And we noticed Chef Madison's recipes look pretty healthy and delicious. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about them.
Yeah.
And how they meet some of the dietary issues that some folks have.
Totally. So,
like me with Miss Sensitive Belly.
Me too.
I think a lot of people are Mr. and Miss Sensitive Bellies, honestly.
Yes, I think you're right.
So something that we really connected on is food that can be for everyone. So I'm vegetarian. Madison is lactose intolerant. Maddie has celiac disease. Then we have people in our lives who are allergic to nuts, allergic to peanuts. People have an eggplant sensitivity. The list is pretty endless. Mm-hmm. And we often find that in the farm to table movement and eating really well, is that it's not accessible to people with different dietary baggage, is sometimes what we say. And also a prefix menu is just, especially me as a vegetarian, is something I would never want to go to, because I usually can't eat half the things there. Mm-hmm. So one thing that we took very seriously at the beginning, and we still take very seriously, is that no matter who's coming to one of our shindigs, is we are caring for all of their needs. No matter if it's an allergy or an aversion or an intolerance, the menu is accessible to everyone. And it doesn't mean we don't do meat or we don't do dairy or we don't have that eggplant. It just means that you will be full no matter what.
Girl after my own heart, because it's exactly how I think. I'm still on that program.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No one's going hungry.
Exactly.
Everyone's
going
hungry.
No, people are full after the shindigs and taking home leftovers.
I saw the menu. It's okay.
Yeah.
Where were we this summer? How did we miss this? How did that happen? We
Madison
had a long
can't
conversation.
Hold back, really.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
So, what kind of things do you have coming up? We do know you're from West Stockbridge Farmers Market, so we know that you're there every week through October 3rd.
Yeah.
And where else can people find your produce?
Our produce, people can buy a bag online. We call it Good for Your Belly Bag, and they could come to the farm and pick it up, and it's an equivalent of like a CSA bag, so it'll be whatever is height of the season. So it'll be like 7 to 9 vegetables. And then at the West Stockbridge Farmers Market, we also sell our produce to the Berkshire Grown Food Access Program and to 3 restaurants. And so that's really where our produce goes. I used to say with restaurants, we sell to Paige's Place in Otis. We sell to After Hours, which is sort of like a pop-up but regular service. And then we also sell to Hilltown Hot Pies, but he's just closing for the summer now.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So tell me about the first one in Otis.
He's actually, the owner will be here in a few hours to pick up an order. It's essentially a diner. It recently opened, and they do, I believe, I don't want to get it wrong, but I believe it's Thursday through Sunday service. And he's really focused, the owner's names is Megan and Eric, on community-oriented space.
Did he buy the diner that was on Route 8?
It was a diner.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I was wondering what was going to happen with that. Just a little side for anybody listening. Speaking of events, because we were, what about shindigs? Are you doing them this year?
Yeah, so...
And what have you got?
Just to describe the shindig a little bit, because we've now tried to make it a term we use. Our shindigs are our farm-to-table events. They're a dinner, but they're even more than a dinner because it's really an immersive experience that people are getting. When we do them at the farm, I give a very in-depth farm tour, and then we always have partners contribute, and then you eat a ton throughout the night. So we just finished our on-farm season, so we will have a few coming up in the fall. Something that I haven't discussed is that Madison is based in Brooklyn, so we do some events in New York as well to do the city connection to what we're doing.
Yeah, bring the farm
great.
To the city.
Yeah, so we have actually a flower workshop in September 29th in Brooklyn, and we're partnering with a urban flower farm called Flowers for All. You'll have small bites, so it's not our normal dinner, but it'll be small bites and drinks, and then people will get to make their own bouquets. Mm-hmm. So that will be really lovely.
Sounds beautiful.
And then we have on October 6th a shindig in Brooklyn as well at a woman-owned brewery called Talaya in Williamsburg, and that will be really incredible since it'll be a lot about storytelling, more like women-focused in food because it's a woman-owned brewery, and people will be able to come in, they'll get a brewery tour, and then in their first drink, we're partnering with a craft person who's making a little beer charm for everybody.
Aww.
And then it'll be a really wonderful meal there. So those are some things that we have coming up. I'll also mention that in addition to our public shindigs, we do privates as well. So we have a few of those this fall. So if people are interested in that, they can go onto our website. And we're doing our first wedding in the end of October.
Lovely.
Which is big. But we also just do birthday parties, or we're doing one soon that's just a group of friends getting together. So
next season, you'll have the shindigs up on your site.
Right.
At the farm, but that's done for the season.
They're done for the season.
Got
at the farm.
It. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But
we
how
may
often
have
you...
some more forest bathing coming up, though.
A forest good. Bathing. Yeah. Okay.
Good, good.
And that will be on the website as well?
That'll be on the website.
And that's
dancing-greens.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's a good place to contact you, is it not? Or how is the best way to contact you?
Going on our website, dancing-greens.com. If you scroll to the bottom, you can sign up for our newsletter, which is an excellent way to stay up to date with what we're doing. And then our email is hello@dancing-greens.com, which is another great way to get in touch with us.
I like that. Hello at.
Hello.
Instead of info at. It's so
hello. Yeah.
Hello is such more friendly. Yeah.
Yeah. And then if anyone is an Instagram person, our Instagram is also very active. Dancing Greens Farm.
With an at in front of it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think sometimes your produce is at the Farm New Marlboro store,
yes,
right?
Oh, yes. I forgot to mention
right
that.
Marlboro.
Yeah. The
New
Farm
Marlboro.
In New Marlboro. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We love Tom.
We are using some of his land. We grew our cucumbers there, and then also our winter squash we grew there, too.
Fantastic.
So that was a really fun, lucky, honestly, partnership with him to be able to utilize his land.
He's such a good guy.
He is such a good guy.
So your shindigs in the season,
yeah,
are they every week, every month?
We
and
do.
Are they here on site?
They're on site, yeah. So we did 5 this season, I believe.
That's a lot.
It was a lot. We do them on the field, al fresco. So we're at the mercy of the weather and the temperature and all of those things. So we really only have July and August to work with. So you can't see it right now, and the listeners definitely can't see. But we have in the middle of the field an empty swath of grass, which is where we set up a long table. We've had up to 40 people here.
That's lovely.
And our color palette is very bright colors. So we have bright colored tablecloths and napkins, and we do colored glass faces. And
I wonder
it's just,
if you have pink in there.
We got a lot of pink. It's very pink heavy. So we've set that up in the middle. And then where you see the grill, we already put it away for the season, but we have an outdoor kitchen set up that we do there.
Lovely.
So we set up the whole meal and the whole farm here, and people will park at the bottom of the hill on the other side of the property and then walk through, and they get to walk around the pond, which is really wonderful because they get to hear the birds and the frogs and get sort of set where we are. And then they'll walk in on the other side of the farm from where we're sitting now. And then we greet them with an herbaceous beverage. We did a lot of cucumber drink this year because we had a lot of cucumbers.
Those cucumbers were amazing.
Thank you.
What were they called? The silver? There's
the
one.
Silver slicer. Yeah.
God.
So good.
So good.
Yeah, it's my favorite. And people will come in through there. And then we always have a musician. We try to create a party.
And who doesn't love a party? And speaking of not parties, Mr. Bill has some questions about...
I do, about your growing methods.
About farming, yeah.
About farming, yeah. This is the Farm and Garden Show. So you do no-till, solarization, intercropping, relay cropping. And you can talk a little bit about that.
We are a farm with no certifications because we find it as limiting and
tedious.
Financially and tedious, and quite honestly it doesn't feel like we're selling in a space that requires it right now. But we practice all organic practices without the certification. We usually use the term regenerative, which also doesn't have a certification. But when I say that term, I'm really talking about prioritizing the soil health and the microbiology that's within the soil networks. So all of the decisions and practices that we're doing goes back to thinking about that microbiology. So we do no-till. I'll be transparent. When we started, we did use a sod cutter to take off that top layer of grass, and then we tilled initially, formed our beds, and then from then on is a permanent bed system is what we do. And then we practice methods such as the three C's: compost, crop rotation, and cover cropping. We try to do as much mulch as possible to keep the soil covered.
Good thing.
And another thing that we try to do, which is a lot harder said than done, is not use any single-use plastic on the farm, which I find very difficult for farms. Very challenging.
Manure? Do you use manure on the land? Do you have animals?
We don't have any animals.
Well, you have this little...
We have a nice little poppy dog who has killed some mice, so she's not useful. She's a worker dog.
Good. Do you want to rent her out?
She's an okay mice killer. Sometimes she chases them around.
Do you do anything with the dairy across the street?
A little bit. They're not actively milking recently. Last year, we did take some manure from them and let it sit and then put it on the fields. But they're in a transition phase, so we haven't been able to work together as much. And then also, a lot of their manure pile has a lot of weed seed since it's just on the side of the road.
We've experienced some of that.
You're like, oh.
Speaking of which, the weeds, what do you do with your edible weeds? What happens with your wild plants? How do you incorporate edible weeds and those kinds of
plants? We try to utilize the ones that are edible. So at a workshop we did earlier, we harvested out the dandelion root and made tea for all the guests, which was wonderful. And then I find wood sorrel is especially great with kids. They like, oh, you could eat this. And then we've included that in dressing the salad and things like that. And then also we've made ferments or just let dandelion sit in a bucket and then sprayed it on plants. I wanted to do more. It just becomes a time thing. I know which ones are good to use and whatnot, but then when you're just going through and weeding a bed, separating the ones that are good versus the ones that aren't, and then having the time to actually make something out of it. So it's definitely a goal to keep trying to do more. Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
I'm going over to Zach, and I want to ask Zach. Zach, what is your favorite role on the farm? What do you see that you love to do the best and that Jamie empowers you to do? Like, says, okay, Zach, that's your thing. You go do it.
Sure. Yeah, thanks. So,
because almost everybody's got those kind of dynamics.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think that before I get into that, I just want to go back for a second and really reiterate the power of Jamie's growing methods. Especially going through farm school, I really was exposed to a lot of different farm methods and was exposed to a wide variety of ways that people grow food, and especially grow food under the guise of organic, right? And one thing that I really learned is just because something's labeled organic doesn't mean it's good for the earth and doesn't mean it's good for you, because there are these massive farms that label themselves organic that,
and they use all kinds of things with a CID at the
exactly yeah. So the way that Jamie is growing and Dancing Greens is growing with no-till and just really being in touch with soil health as the beginning block is a really, really powerful way to actually offer healing support back to the earth, because that allows the soil microbes and the fungi in the soil to actually flourish and flourish in a way that everyone's healthier. You know, I think one cool thing about
healthy soil, healthy food.
Yeah, exactly.
Healthy body.
Yeah, and one cool thing about farming here is that we really get to see the wildlife. So often there'll be frogs in the pathways or snakes slithering around, and that's just a sign that, you know, this is actually a place that is conducive and inviting to life, right? And that means that is really beautiful. And not only is this method of growing good for the earth, but it actually creates far more nutritionally dense foods. And so I read this really interesting study that it would take 7 oranges today to have the same nutritional content as 1 orange 100 years ago.
I believe.
And it's the soil. And some people say that that's one reason why there's so much obesity, is because people actually have to eat way more calories to get the same number of nutrients, right?
Absolutely.
And so the way that Jamie is growing actually creates an extraordinarily nutrient-dense foods, and that helps our bodies to function better and just to be more able to actually have health. And food is medicine. And so as we engage in healthy food, we increase our healthy bodies and healthy communities.
Church.
Exactly.
Yeah. We are totally, because when you're saying that about the whole obesity thing, when you have a healthy gut, it lets you know when you've had enough. And also, if you're eating your healthy organic foods, when I'm being very careful when I say organic, I mean organically grown, biologically grown, whatever the better thing is, your body has the ability to say, I've had enough. I'm getting what I need. Unfortunately, what's happened, as you well know from the studies, is that altered foods that most people are getting, they do things like trick the apostat, and people don't have knowledge. They don't know when their body has had enough because there isn't enough nutrition and it's been masked. So they're encouraged to eat more because of the things.
And there are also addictive flavors that people
that
make you eat too much also.
Absolutely.
And then a lot of chemicals that are added also just really wreak havoc on our bodies and really lead to a lot of chronic illnesses that we're seeing. So I really just want to really hammer home actually what an incredible, revolutionary, and powerful thing Jamie is doing here, which is that to grow food in this way is really the foundation of all the rest of life. And that's one thing that I've really learned coming into farming, is that is the foundation of everything else. And just props to you, Jamie, for growing a healthy world by doing what you're doing.
I know, absolutely. Yeah. There was a wonderful Dr. David Johnson and his wife, Weechin Su, who created something called the Johnson Su No-Turn
Composting Bioreactor.
Cool. And it's a one-time application, and it's all about feeding that microbiome. He was a soil biologist, and we had the good fortune to get him before he was in such demand nobody could talk to him. We had him do a series of workshops on our farm in California. And we made batches of several of those bioreactors, and it was enough that one batch of this compost, which is easy to do. It takes a year to mature, and you do it in one day, and we can send you the link.
Yeah, please do.
It's really fantastic.
It inoculates your soil with microbes, of diverse microbes, because it sits for a year. You do it in a batch.
Yeah.
Fall leaves are a perfect time to do it. Fall leaves, little grass clippings.
It's like dark chocolate cake. And you make a slurry out of it. You can take 1 cup or 1 liter to 70 liters. It's like a huge amount. And you can just put it in your trenches, and this continues that fungal dominant enriching to the soil and microorganisms.
This is the time of year to create that batch compost where you put it all in, you wet it as you go. There are videos online, Johnson-Su, composting bioreactor. Just look that up online and you'll find it.
But we are sitting with someone who's a young farmer who's putting in the right kind of applications her farm, and she's having amazing looking food. How do I know? Because I've eaten it and I buy it. We grow food, but we don't grow everything that Jamie grows. So it's kind of wonderful. I don't know how she's growing cucumbers. I think it's magic. Forget what Zach said. I think it's magic. And I think it's witchcraft.
We have a question waiting for what Zach's particular roles are on the farm.
Oh, yes. That's right.
And then I have another question right after it.
I know. We're just full of questions.
So I think Jamie does a really good job of delegating at the right times. And, you know, actually, one of my favorite jobs on the farm is harvesting cucamelons. They're also called gherkins. They're these adorable little cucumber. They almost look like a cucumber watermelon. Each one looks like a little work of art. And I really enjoy doing that. And Jamie very kindly lets me do it every Thursday morning.
So cute.
Yeah, they're just,
If I still had dolls, I would play with them and they would be the dolls' watermelons.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea.
So any mom should be looking out for these at the West Stockbridge Farmers Market on Thursdays, 3 to 6.
And they're delicious too.
Through October 3rd, Any more things you delegated to do? Is it just whatever? nature?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's whatever the
Zach's
moment calls for.
Very good at folding tarps, which is one of my least favorite things to do.
I do love folding tarps. I forgot about that. Thank you, Jamie. I do love folding tarps. And I love broad forking.
I like to use farming to skip the gym membership.
So any farm task that can take the place of a weight room is good for me.
Spreading wood chips.
Yeah. I do. That's another forte of mine. It's very satisfying. Very satisfying.
So let's get into a little technical thing. When you're turning over a bed, say when you're pulling the onions or when you're pulling the leeks or when you're done with the squash, what do you do in this no-till world? Obviously, a few places there's some weeds going on, which is another kind of cover crop. How do you deal with having the soil soft enough to plant?
So it generally depends on what's in there before and how soon I need the bed. So for example, looking at that zucchini forest right now filled with weeds and old zucchini plants, we'll just use loppers to lop out the plants and then we'll compost that plant material. And then since we don't need the bed so immediately, I would actually put a tarp over it to terminate all of the weeds that are in there. And then we probably won't use those beds until next year. So it'll be putting another round of compost and then leaves on top. But something that, for instance, my lettuce mix is a really quick turn. So what I'll do is sometimes when I'm ready to take out the lettuce mix and say it doesn't have too much weeds in it, I'll use a different type of a plastic tarp, a clear one that's recycled from the hoop house. I've used the term as solarizing it, but someone has told me that you could also say occulating the bed. Do you know anything about that? Because solarizing, I've heard, is like when you're trying to terminate a bad bacteria versus occulating is just killing off the plant material.
Right. I've heard solarizing for the whole thing. If you're putting a dark tarp on, it has to stand a lot longer. If you're putting a clear tarp.
Yeah.
So you use more clear tarps?
More clear tarps when I'm flipping very quickly in the summertime. Since the clear tarp will then... If it's a sunny day, it could be 48 hours. If it's a rainy week, it might have to be a lot longer because you're sort of on the sun's clock. But for something like lettuce mix, if the clear tarp is really tight on it, it could be, if I put it on in the morning, it could be dead by the evening.
That's fantastic.
Because it'd be really quick.
We didn't know about that.
Well, we learned about it from Brian O'Hara. I'm too in love with all the edible wild plants that I make into wild chips and salad mix and everything else. I'm loath to kill a plant, so I'm a terrible weeder.
Right. So we'll do that, and then when we take that off, we'll use just like a rake to put that into the pathways, the dead material, and then depending on how compact the ground is, we'll either broad fork it or we might not. We just might seed right into it.
Fantastic. Yeah. And I like that you're putting in the pathway because everything's getting those nutrients.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's just less work. I think about efficiency all the time.
Sure.
Like if I'm going to schlep that somewhere, it's less work. I need to suppress the pathway anyway.
Exactly. And use that material. Why not?
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Do you use manure in your compost?
For the compost that we do here, we don't do manure. I actually have vermicompost in the cabin where I live, which I'm going to harvest soon, and then we'll mix that up into the compost, which will be great.
So that's manure. It's worm manure.
It's worm manure.
Vermiculture.
Yeah, I love that. And then I'll also, because we don't produce enough compost here, I'll order in from Stanton Home, which I actually worked for them over the winter helping with their compost, and they have horse manure in their compost. Yeah.
So their weed seeds a problem?
No, they do a pretty large production.
Oh, because they're heating it enough that the weed
they're
seeds
heating
don't
enough,
make it.
So they're killing it.
Wow.
The weed seeds off. Yeah.
That's great. Because horse manure is really tricky that way.
Mm.
And salt, I've heard, can build up from that over a long time, but it depends on what the horses are eating, I would suppose.
They mix a lot of food. They get like a ton of transfer stations in the area, bring it to Stanton Home. So there's a ton of food waste going in their compost as well.
Nice.
Right. Yeah. So you're balancing things out. That's great.
Yeah.
And how do you manage pests from large to small? The smallest leaf hopper to the largest bear. Okay, a dog's probably part of it.
Poppy answered that question. She just said, I go after mices and anything that's furry and runs along. That's what she's saying. She's saying, I am the head rodent person in charge. Good girl. You do a good job. Yes, you do. Now, let's ask Jamie what else.
Well, Poppy.
Hey. Is that how you scare them? I guess. That's a very good bark.
So, pests. We'll start with the large. So, we have a fence around the property. It is not tall enough to keep deer out.
Uh-huh.
But we really haven't had that much issues with deer. I think one reason is that we're by the road. I think another reason is we're right next to Beartown State Park, and I think there's just enough going on. That's my theory, at least.
And there's the name, Beartown.
Yes.
Why do they need to come to Dancing Greens if they can hang out with their own pigs?
Yes, and it's so many miles and miles and miles in there. So the deer, knock on wood, we haven't had that much issues. I've seen bunnies and other small things. Nothing that's
like
caused
Poppy's
a lot
on
of...
the program.
Poppy's on the program. We've had some field mice. I think the field mice have actually taken out the most amount of crops. I lost all of my kohlrabi this year because of
voles
field mice.
Voles too?
Yeah, the voles.
They took ours too.
Yeah.
Took
everything. I think actually when I do the tarps, the black tarps, the voles hide under that. So I try not to do that beyond just
You're
in
right
the winter.
You're right about that.
Yeah. But we have Poppy. And then in terms of smaller pests, quite honestly, the biggest thing we do is the row cover or remay, and I try to be very diligent with when we put especially a brassica in the ground, immediately putting the row cover on it, keeping it tight, and that's been a big thing to keep things out. And then the only other thing we do is especially something like cabbage moth or something where I can see the caterpillar or the physical pest on it, is I'll just go around and remove it and put it in soapy water. The farm is of the scale where we're able to do that. As much as I can, I'll put the row cover on. And also just another wonderful thing is because a lot of the food goes to what we cook for the events, I can just give the imperfect, quote-unquote, looking stuff to Madison to use.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Where does she do the food prep?
She'll use the house over there to do the food prep.
Nice.
Yeah.
What intercrops work best for you?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I found with intercropping is I do think about the nutrition balance, mm-hmm. but I think a lot more about the timing of the crops. So in the physical space. So something that works a lot is trellises. So those are actually our cucumelons that Zach loves. We've harvested them out now, but right next to where we have the physical trellis for the cucumelons, we had scallions on the side of both sides. So I try to do that. So when we had our peas, I did lettuce heads. So those types of things. In our tomato tunnel, we have the basil in between the tomato plants. When we transplanted the zucchini in, I did two lines of radishes on either side. And then I've, for the most part, harvested those out before the zucchini took over. So I think the timing and the idea of something growing physically lateral and tall versus something staying close to the ground are the best intercrops I've found so far.
Sounds very good.
Yeah. And also different root behavior.
Yeah, root behavior.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although carrot and radish, because of timing, are supposed to be a good mix. The problem is that I leave some of the radishes to grow radish pods, which are still producing after many months. So the carrots didn't make it in that bed.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So you got to get all the radishes out, even the ones that you want to save for seeds and pods.
Yeah, exactly.
We do notice it's a woman-owned farm, and we're really delighted with that, because did you see that? The wonderful video out there, put a woman in charge?
No.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'll send you a link. It's fantastic. Anybody listening can Google, put a woman in charge. It's fantastic. It's with Roseanne Cash and Keb Moe. And it's amazing. Anyway, do you also own the land?
We don't own the land. My family owns the land.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, we're very, very fortunate. And why we were able to, quite honestly, start is because access to land is so hard. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But as we were saying, I think before, I don't know if we were recording, if that new land bill comes in there's going to be a lot more access, because we are realizing as a nation, we need more people like you two, who are younger and healthy bodied and are very, very passionate about growing food.
And growing better quality food. More and more awareness, I think, and more push for it. Whether the large institutions will follow quickly enough, I don't know.
And I want to just recap upcoming events in October and beyond.
So we have two shindigs coming up in Brooklyn, one September 29th and one October 6th. And then our height of the season has come to a close, but if you keep up with us on dancing-greens.com, we'll keep updating our events there.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And we'll keep pressuring you to have them because Bill and I love nothing
you
more
guys,
than a shindig.
You need to come, yeah.
And we'll be dancing.
Absolutely.
We'll be dancing on Dancing Greens. It's been greens. What's wrong with my mouth?
I like Dancing Dreams, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dancing Greens. Maybe I'll do something with it. Dancing Greens. We've had the pleasure of being with Jamie Nadler and with Zach Rissman.
But let me do this. Are there things we haven't asked about that you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Is there anything that we should have asked you both? Is there anything you'd like to share with us about this whole adventure of farming and this whole discovery of this is what you want to do?
Yeah, I think just one thing that strikes me on that is, and I wonder if Jamie has a similar experience, but one thing that I've found is that there seems to be a generational shift going on, whereas it seems like for most of human history, people grew food because their parents grew food, because their families grew food. And Jamie and I both have a similar experience of actually making the conscious choice that this is actually how we want to spend our time. And I think that that is pretty weird for a lot of people. I've met a lot of old timers who say, oh, you're a farmer? Well, you must come from a line of farmers. And I say, no, I chose to be a farmer. And for some people, it doesn't compute because that's actually, in the grand scheme of our society, really new. And I think that that is something that actually gives me a lot of hope, is that Jamie and I, on paper, should never have become farmers, right? We grew up in places where our parents worked in New York City, and we went to these universities that didn't teach farming. Mm-hmm. And so I just find it to be a really, really hopeful thing that Jamie and I are two of many, many, many people in very similar places. And one thing that I found going to farm school was, you know, pretty much everyone was in that same boat, was they got a glimpse of what life could be like if they sort of followed the status quo. And then they made this conscious choice to say, I actually would like to spend my life differently, more aligned with my values, more aligned with creating a healthy world, a healthy body. So I think that for me, it's always great. There's a lot of doom and gloom out there. Mm-hmm. And just with the yin and the yang, the more doom and gloom, the more beauty also exists, because one can't exist without the other. And so just want to put that out there, that there is so much hopefulness in my heart about our world and about the people in this world and about the generations to come, because we have this awareness and we have this new sense of choice and agency about how we want to spend our lives and how we want to live in accordance with our values and what kind of a world do we actually want to live in and pass on to future generations. And again, like, Jamie and I are just two of vast number of people who say no more of this just like blind destruction of the land, no more of this giving over to the powers that be who tell us we have to be miserable for our whole lives and that's what life's about, and that there's actually so much room for joy and beauty and community and health and wellness. And we say we're not really going to accept that other narrative.
We're not going to take it.
We're not going to take
it. We're going to take that
exactly.
picture. And on that note, I want to just share a wonderful thing that you probably both know. John Kemp is the editor of Acres USA. Mm-hmm. But he has said in his many lectures that we can turn this entire environment chaos and issues around quite radically if we all did a good part of these things, like what you're calling regenerative agriculture.
Yeah.
And it's being used by a lot of people now, and people are turning it on. He said, in 4.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is not doom and gloom. It really is possible.
Yeah.
And it is possible in our lifetime. And since Bill and I are older, it's possible in our lifetime. And you should definitely be living in paradise by the time you're our age. And you will deserve it.
I was actually just talking about the Green Revolution with Andy, my partner, the other day. I was just talking about the history of it and GMO seeds. And
I was just going to say the original, yeah. The one that wasn't really green.
Right, green, I'm doing quotation marks. But I was just struck by saying the timeline of it and how quickly that turned around, and then as a result of specific policy, they can get out, and then just subsidizing a certain type of agriculture, all of a sudden that was the norm, and how that was a choice in such a short amount of time, and remembering that we have all the answers now for a different type of choice. So yes, it's about, we always say top down and bottom up. Dancing Greens is doing a bottom up approach, but we also need the top down. So we need, if both those ways are working, it'll happen. It has to happen.
And it'll happen quickly.
Yeah, it'll happen quickly.
It'll happen quickly. Yeah. And I'm very optimistic too.
Yeah.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed because I have been very optimistic in the past.
Yeah. Yeah.
Around certain elections. And I just want to mention that all the opinions expressed on this radio show are only of the host and the guests and do not reflect upon the station. I am of the opinion that if we get those right people, and it looks like they could come in, I'm knocking on wood for those who cannot see that.
There are changes, though, that have to happen with agriculture,
absolutely,
because all the entrenched government pressure, whatever party has been in charge, has been, unfortunately, to keep the big ag going.
The big money.
And so whoever is in just needs to be spoken to about what you believe to be the right kind of farming to do. And there is a farm bill that I think for the second year is not going to get advanced forward, but eventually there will be a new farm bill. I think they're just continuing the old policies of the 2018 one until they can put a new one in. But there are some regenerative policies, and I think there's Regenerate America. That's one organization that has some information on some of the things. You can just get the information and decide what you believe in.
After the interview was over, we walked around their garden and looked at some plants. And we even shared some information we had about a plant that they had they didn't know about. And we learned about how they label their beds. And after that, you will hear the conclusion of the interview.
Look at those gorgeous greens.
And look at these crazy sunflowers.
I know,
oh, those are
fun.
Wow.
They're called Teddy.
Bright yellow.
They look like little teddy bears.
I know, they're so cute.
They're called Teddy?
Yeah, they're called Teddy.
Oh, they are called Teddy?
Yeah.
Big name.
Yeah.
Look at these beautiful greens.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, it's just gorgeous. I'm so happy to finally get here.
I know.
Do you do fall overwinter cover crops at all?
Overwinter cover crops. I do like a bit of peas and oats.
Yeah.
But I honestly try to use the beds as long as I can. So I do more like
vetch,
compost.
Vetch and rye is another
look
thing.
Vetch and rye is good too.
That we've.
Yeah.
Oh, look, they got a mallow.
Oh, yeah. That's like European mallow.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's going to seed now if you want some.
Well, you know, this is lovely stuff.
Yep.
Do you eat it? Because it's good stuff.
No, can you eat it?
Yeah, you
can.
The
leaves. We put the leaves in the salad when they're tender. In a few weeks, the leaves will be really good because it's fall.
These are really good.
Yum. Wow.
It's very demulcent, and we have a recipe for mallow and making chips out of it. Demulcent means that it's soothing, and it's got kind of like a mucilaginous quality. So that's what it does. It helps soothe those linings, and the Chinese revere it for its anti-aging, anti-inflammatory properties. And the roots, if you took the root up, if you said, okay, I want to take this plant out, chop up part of the root, stick it in a glass of water or a bowl of water for about an hour, and you'll have this kind of a milky substance that'll be kind of very thick. You can use that as a hair wash.
Oh, really?
You can use it as a mouthwash.
Cool.
It's seriously good stuff.
And if you don't want to lose the plant, you just take the crown part of the root and replant it.
These are better than ours.
I can't believe we've been walking by this plant.
I had no idea.
It
just says let it do its thing.
It's a European mallow. And when you have those little green things,
those little
seeds are also, when they're green.
Yeah.
Morocco and Israel.
Yeah.
They take this and they have a dish, I think it's called kibbetza.
Mm.
Where they gather a lot of mallow leaves and they cook it with chicken.
Mm.
But you can also do it with tofu, tempeh, and curry that up. It's a wonderful dish. I've made it myself. It's yummy.
Yeah.
Mm. And those are good as cooked greens, too.
Cool.
They're wonderful.
Amazing.
It's a great plant.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I always say, if you wonder what you need to be doing with your body when you have that relationship, as you do with your land, you just look and say, okay, what does Mother Earth want me to take care of? How am I going to heal myself? And that's what I was saying. I was looking.
You got another one.
Oh, well,
there.
Here's the ribwort. Yep. There's the thistle.
Yeah.
And there's the dandelion. It's telling me I need to.
So these are the kind of leaves we would put in the salad.
Yeah,
these little.
Ones.
See how tender they are when they're first up. And all these things get tender as you go into the fall.
Yeah.
You know, they go back to spring. Nancy Basil. Why does it say Nancy?
We named the blocks, which is like a specific growing space, after me, Madison, Maddie, and Andy's grandmothers. Maternal energy here.
I love that!
Yeah.
Nancy, Joyce,
Yvonne,
how sweet.
Beatrice, And then over there we got Rose, Karen. And then the only grandma who's been here is my mom's mom, Rochelle. And we have a picture of her and I next to the sign, which is really great.
And lastly, if you want to see more about Dancing Greens, check out their website at dancing-greens.com.
And if you need to get in touch with them, you can do hello@dancing-greens.com. Sure. You can send an email there. It's been a pleasure having you both. Anything else?
No, just it's incredible to talk to farmers like you who have been doing the work for so long. So it's really an honor. So really appreciate it.
Honor to be with the young generation.
Yes.
The next ones take over the world.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
Okay. Act for the welfare of seven generations.
This is WBCR LP Great Barrington, Berkshire Community Radio, broadcasting at 97.7 FM and streaming at berkshireradio.org, where you can also make a donation to support local programming on this great station. Thank you for listening.